Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
COVID Emergency Declaration Ending by Carol A. Cates, MSN, MBA, RN, Chief Nursing Officer of the Odessa Regional Medical Center. I have said more times than I can count, I wouldn't wish COVID on my worst enemy. I am still stunned by the ferocity of that virus and the damage and suffering it caused before the vaccine was available and the disease mutated into the Omicron strains. For most people, it's not as ferocious now, but COVID continues to cause horrible damage and suffering with the disease itself. Long COVID syndromes and post-COVID syndromes in far too many people. I so wish that COVID, like its cousins, the SARS viruses and the 90s and early 2000s, would have disappeared. But that is not the case. COVID, it seems like the flu, will be with us forever. Last week, the White House announced they will be ending the COVID National Emergency and Public Health Emergency Declarations on May the 11th. That is a major step in transitioning COVID from pandemic, meaning widespread, unmanageable surges, to endemic, something we live with and can manage. While endemic means it is something we live with, that the experts feel is not something that is likely to be as out of control as COVID was in the early stages, is a really great thing. So it is a big positive that the emergency declaration is ending. In terms of what that means for all of us day to day, it is a lessening of government involvement in managing the disease across populations and more involvement by individuals when it comes to COVID, just like with all of the other transmissible diseases we deal with. For instance, right now, how expenses and payment for COVID-related services is highly controlled by the federal government. Once the emergency declaration is over, a COVID diagnosis will be treated like any other diagnosis. Payment for services will depend on a person's insurance coverage. While none of this is certain, experts are predicting this is how services will change after the emergency declarations expire. The ability to order free at-home tests at covidtest.gov will go away. Medicaid testing is likely to stay free until 2024. Medicare will likely eliminate free at-home testing, and for people who have private insurance, free testing will depend on the state and the insurance carrier. PCR testing, which is considered the gold standard for COVID testing, currently costs around $100 per test. Vaccines will also change, with Medicaid continuing to supply free vaccines with no projected end date. Medicare has not announced how they will handle COVID vaccine cost. For private insurers, like with testing, it will depend on the state and the insurance carrier. While neither Pfizer or Moderna has given an exact price, experts are estimating the vaccines will cost between $110 and $130 a dose. Both Medicare and Medicaid will continue to cover Paxlovid through 2024, but as most other treatments are not FDA approved, those are not covered by Medicare or Medicaid at this point. Private insurers, again, will depend on state and the insurance carrier. One of the good things that came with COVID is the rise of telehealth. The emergency created a window that stopped geographic restrictions and improved payments for those services. Once the emergency is lifted, telehealth regulations may go back to previous rules, which largely depend on state regulations. Experts on healthcare disparities worry about how this will affect rural health care, especially with so many rural facilities having lost services or closed altogether during the pandemic. In addition, Medicaid coverage reviews, which were suspended during the pandemic, will resume, which may mean people who currently have Medicaid coverage will lose that coverage once the reviews resume. Finally, hospital funding, which was tied to COVID survival rates, will also likely go away. Again, all of this is not finalized, but the major consensus among experts is COVID resource allocation is going to change dramatically. That means that all of us will have more choices, but it also means we will have more individual responsibility. The emergency going away does not mean COVID is going away. It is still out there, and it's still not anything I would wish on my worst enemy. Please make sure you are continuing to take precautions against COVID, just as you do with flu and other illnesses. Please continue to wash your hands, stay home when you are sick, and visit with your primary care provider about vaccinations and other measures to prevent both your ability to get COVID and other transmissible diseases and pass them along. Arrest made in June shooting. A 20-year-old Odessa man wanted in connection with a June shooting was arrested Thursday by the Odessa Police Department. According to an OPD report on June the 5th, two groups of people fought each other during a get-together in the 1300th block of Anderson before relocating to the 206th block of East 11th Street and continuing their fight there. Officers learned that during the fight, a 21-year-old man who was trying to intervene was shot at. In the process of running away, he was struck in the lower back and behind one of his knees, the report stated. Using witness accounts, social media photos, and a driver's license photo, officers identified Vasi Javelin Milton as the suspect, and a warrant was issued for his arrest. Milton was booked into the Ector County Jail Thursday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He remained in the jail Monday on a $100,000 surety bond. Two accused on drug charges. Two men were arrested Friday on a first-degree felony drug charge by the Ector County Sheriff's Department. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, investigators set up a methamphetamine purchase through a credible and reliable confidential informant and arrested Victor Perkins, 56, of Odessa, and Harry Valerde, 29, of Midland, when both showed up in a parking lot in the 2000 block of East 8th Street to complete the deal. Both were booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of delivery of a controlled substance, 4 to 200 grams. Perkins and Valverde remained in custody Monday on $100,000 surety bonds. Valverde is also being held on a parole violation charge. Odessa woman accused of aggravated assault. An Odessa woman was arrested Sunday night after two of her daughters and her husband told police she tried to kill him with a beer bottle and a gun. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call from the 3700 block of North Texas Avenue around 8 p.m., and when they arrived, they found broken glass and blood on the fronts and sides of multiple cars in the driveway and around the front door patio. The officers heard the sound of a disturbance inside the house, and because nobody answered the door, they forced their way inside, the report stated. Officers found a 52-year-old man with an extremely large gash in the middle of his forehead, and they were told his wife, Mara Cruz Sanchez, 42, struck him in the forehead with a beer bottle during a fight over infidelity. According to the police report, the man ran inside to try to stop the bleeding, and Sanchez followed him, demanding to know who his lover is. According to the report, Sanchez demanded another beer from her 29-year-old daughter and then fired a .22-caliber gun at her husband, barely missing him. Sanchez's husband told police he tackled her to get the gun away from her, and the 29-year-old and a 21-year-old daughter wrestled with Sanchez so he could leave the house. According to the report, Sanchez's husband was afraid she'd kill him, and he was also afraid for Sanchez's daughter and two younger children inside the house. Officers found a bullet hole that traveled through an entire wall, a shell casing, and a gun with one missing bullet, the report stated. Sanchez was arrested on suspicion of two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, and failure to identify because she told officers who asked her for her name and date of birth to figure it out, the report stated. Aggravated assault with a deadly weapon is a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. Sanchez remains in the Ector County Jail on surety bonds totaling $100,396. Two Odessans accused in burglary spree. Two Odessa men have been arrested in connection with a string of burglaries involving businesses, vehicles, and stolen vehicles. Roger Risher and Abel Abilia, both 37, were booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of burglary of a building and engaging in organized criminal activity. In addition, Risher is facing an unauthorized use of a motor vehicle charge, and Abilia was arrested on multiple outstanding warrants and a failure to identify fugitive from justice charge. According to the Odessa Police Department, officers noticed a stolen vehicle in the Stripes parking lot at Yukon Road and Andrews Highway on Friday, and during the course of their investigation, ended up in the 8,300 block of Golder Avenue, where they saw another stolen vehicle. A search warrant was obtained, and during the subsequent search, officers found a considerable amount of stolen property, police said. The Criminal Investigation Division Property Unit linked Risher and Abila to several business burglaries, including those at the Mango Tango, 1219 West 10th Street, and Don Saw Automotive, located at 8th and Jefferson. Anyone with information concerning these crimes is encouraged to contact the Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. Callers are anonymous. Risher is being held on surety bonds totaling $23,500, and Abilia is being held on surety bonds totaling $82,500. Jail records show Abilia was wanted on failure to appear warrants in three Ector County District Court cases, where he's facing theft and evading arrest charges dating back to alleged incidents in December of 2019. Odessian accused of assaulting woman. A 25-year-old Odessa man was arrested Saturday after the mother of his children told police he broke through her front door and assaulted her with his fists and his feet. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call from an apartment in the 1600 block of North Haddock Avenue around 5:30 p.m. Saturday, and in the background they could hear a woman saying, "You just broke through the door." When officers arrived, they were told a 21-year-old woman had been outside with Nathan Reed when he began chasing her. She said she fled into the apartment she shared with her mother and two infants fathered by Reed, but Reed broke down the door, struck her, shoved her to the ground, and kicked her while her disabled mother and her babies watched. The woman's mother provided police the same story, and officers saw injuries to her face, scuff marks on the ground, and damage to the front door, the report stated. Reed was arrested on suspicion of burglary of a habitation / family violence, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He remained in the Ector County Jail Monday on a $40,000 surety bond, and an emergency protective order was issued. Justice Department brings awareness to teen dating violence. February is Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, and the Justice Department's Office of Violence Against Women will hold an observance event at 10 a.m. Tuesday. The event will be open to the public in a virtual format and will feature remarks from Associate Attorney General Vanta Gupta and OVW Director Allison Randell, along with presentations by youth leaders from Jewish Women's International, MCSR, and other organizations engaged in violence prevention efforts. Join OVW and its guests at justice.gov/live to take part in this vital initiative and bring awareness to teen dating violence. If you are experiencing or have experienced domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, dating violence, or other forms of related abuse, help is available. Call the Teen Dating Abuse Hotline at 1-866-331-9474, Victim Connect at 1-855-484-2846, or the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-656-4673. Trustees to hear demographic presentation. Presentations on a demographic study, choice schools, and the development office are on the agenda for the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees workshop at 6 p.m. Tuesday in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Georgia Leonard with Davis Demographics will present findings from their demographic study showing where people live and the growth of the district. The purpose of the report is to identify and inform the district of the demographic trends occurring within the community, supplemental agenda material said. This will assist the district in making facility adjustments that may be necessary to accommodate the potential student population shifts and the need for potential attendance zone boundary changes and/or the construction of additional capability, the material detailed. Applications for choice schools, formerly known as magnet schools in ECISD, have increased from 2,607 in 2022-23 to 4,008 for 2023-24, a 53.7% rise from last year. The presentation also indicates the board will discuss looking at ways to improve, offer more middle school choices, provide professional and learning support, share school-specific findings with campus leadership teams, strengthen district oversight and support, and expand the International Baccalaureate Program. The program website said the IB continuum of programs is designed to develop well-rounded individuals who can respond to today's challenges with optimism and an open mind. The IB program is currently only at Odessa High School. On a separate item, Celeste Potter, Director of Development, will provide an update on the work of the Development Office, whose goal is to engage the community in support of the district's instructional programs through successful fundraising and communications to help us meet the needs of our growing student population, the material said. Additionally, policy updates also will be discussed relating to emergency plans, student parent complaints and grievances, and student discipline. Obituaries. Noxine Campbell Clack died February the 13th at her home in Odessa. Robert Smith, age 83, of Odessa, passed away on February the 6th. Carol Ruth Baker, age 85, Odessa, died Saturday, February the 11th. John David Harris, age 87, of Odessa, died Saturday, February the 11th. Charlie Wayne Poole, age 83, of Odessa, died Monday, February the 13th. Jati Martin Slapp, age 66, of Odessa, died Monday, February the 6th. Jackson Lee Warnick, of Odessa, age 17, died Saturday, February the 11th. Martin Colton, age 74, of Midland, died Friday, January the 27th, in Midland. Verna Lee Sullivan died February the 6th. David Gallivan, age 85, passed away on Monday, February the 6th. Gracie Ella Lee, age 89, of Odessa, passed away on February the 7th. Virginia Ruth Sissy McClure passed away on February the 8th. Sandra K. Sandy McMillan passed away on February the 6th. Virginia Annette Brown passed away on February the 6th. Luther Vernon Foreman, age 90, died February the 7th. Catherine McLean Green, age 66, died February the 6th. Luann Steele, age 66, of Odessa, died Monday, January 30th. Stephen Marion Steve Brooks, age 69, passed away on February the 11th. James Rhodes, age 94, passed away on February the 6th. Betty Horrell, age 78 of Odessa, died Thursday, February the 2nd. James Rhodes, 94, died February the 6th. Samuel Clark Roberts, age 64, of Midland, passed away January the 30th. Robert Franklin Smith, 83, passed away on February the 6th. Carolyn Ruth Myers, age 77, of Odessa, passed away on February the 6th. Romero H. Brito, age 68, of Odessa, passed away on February the 3rd.
This is the Dear Abby column. Friend's frisky husband makes his desires clear. Dear Abby, my married friend is a swinger. She says her husband's sex drive has declined lately, but it hasn't. He keeps trying to get me to talk naughty with him, but I always refuse. To me, that would be betraying my friend. He has encouraged her to get a live-in girlfriend for herself. I asked her what she thinks would happen if she did, and he decided to do the same. She doesn't believe he would, but I do. Abby, I value our friendship. If I tell her about his late-night habits, it would hurt her. If I don't, and she finds out, it will also hurt her. He always apologizes after each attempt. Apologies mean nothing if he continues to repeat his actions. Lately, I have avoided spending time with her because of his late-night requests. What should I do? Signed, Turned Off in the South. Dear Turned Off, tell him his advances are not welcome and to stop calling you, and that if he doesn't, you will tell your friend. If he persists, inform your friend how long this has been going on and that you have been reluctant to tell her, but it has reached the point that it is making you not want to be around her either. After that, the ball will be in her court. Dear Abby, my adult son is married with a newborn son. I recently learned that he is the victim of spousal abuse. He was keeping it a secret from us, but we found out when authorities became involved. My son loves his wife and wants to make it work. I have no idea how to navigate holidays and special occasions when we will see them. Knowing your adult son is being harmed by his wife, how would you interact with this woman? Signed, Uneasy in Arizona. Dear Uneasy, be glad that the fact that your daughter-in-law is a spousal abuser is now on record. Before the next holidays, you and your husband should have a talk with your son about why he has tolerated the abuse and what his options are. Is she so out of control that she could hurt the baby in a fit of rage? Are they receiving counseling? Has he spoken to an attorney about this? A support group your son would find helpful is Stop Abuse for Everyone. StopAbuseForEveryone.org. Once he gets in touch, he will realize that he's far from the only husband who has been battered. He also needs to know you are there for him regardless. So when the holidays roll around, be cordial and keep your eyes open. Dear Abby, I have two friends whose daughters will be married this fall, both for the second time. I have given gifts to both women for their first marriages. What is the rule of etiquette for the second time around? Signed, Wants to Know in Montana. Dear Wants, if you plan to attend the weddings, the rule is to give something less expensive this time around, along with your good wishes for a happy future. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.